see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Fire. Thanks. I don't need help. Just watch me love myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating. Can you keep up?
Welcome to Love to See It with Emma and Claire, a true crime podcast about a man with a dark secret, a man who is open to the possibility of one day becoming the Bachelor.
The darkest, dirtiest deed imaginable, just the depths of devil behavior. This week, the investigation of Thomas's crimes culminates in a dramatic show trial.
Really just the worst humanity has to offer, and it's going to be difficult for us to even think about his deeds.
Can we even speak his name?
I prefer that we not, lest we summon him. Our guest today fell through, so we're going through this terrifying episode alone, which actually may be for the best because we went really bananas with the notes. We have like 12 pages of notes, so please bear with us as we try to be as succinct as possible.
Yeah, guys, this episode was full of filler, and yet somehow Claire and I can talk about literally anything.
Yeah, we can't promise it'll be interesting, but we're going to do our best. So, yeah, speaking of the filler, I mean, so this whole episode is, it's one group date, and it's a rose ceremony. That is, I would say, like half of a normal episode. In terms of the actual mechanical components of a Bachelor episode, they have half of that, and somehow they made a full episode out of it, mostly by just blowing it all out with hours of angst over he who must not be named. Did it feel like too much filler for you? Like, did it bother you? Did you enjoy it? I find it kind of relaxing sometimes when there's a
lot. I agree. I was into it. I was like, this is like a placid sea of an episode, despite, you know, this buildup of drama and anxiety.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the like slow return of Blake that we all knew was coming. I don't know. I was able to let it wash over me.
It's like,
and I was here for it.
Is it filler or is it just part of the natural rise and fall of narrative? You know, it can't all be the climax. You've got to have the exposition and the slow build, the denouement. Like, we're not really there yet, but I'm like, bring in Tayshia and Caitlin for their third girl chat of the episode. I don't have anything else to do with my evening. So let's
also, can we just talk about how like lovely it is to have Tayshia and Caitlin there to guide Katie rather than Chris Harrison? It's like every week I'm like, oh my God. Imagine if this was Chris Harrison. That'd be fucking weird.
Imagine if Chris Harrison was like, someone from my past wants to meet you. It's Blake. And he's over me, finally. No, I mean, it's true. There are moments when Caitlin would make a little snarky comment or something, and I'd be like, Chris Harrison couldn't do this. Like,
could never.
No way. In this moment, what would Chris Harrison be doing? He'd be like crinkling his eyes very seriously at Katie and saying like, wow, you must have a lot to think about right now. The human equivalent of filler in certain ways. So let's dive into the action. We open with this sort of group scene, different things happening in different parts of the property. Thomas is jogging down a lonely, dusty trail. Meanwhile, the guys are all gathered in small to medium-sized groups discussing Thomas. Christian and Trey are sort of leaning on a low wall and remembering that shocking moment when Thomas confessed to having once, months ago in his life, thought of the possibility of being the bachelor. And we actually get like a full flashback.
I loved this. As someone who consumes Bravo, this is like a convention that Bravo shows lean really heavily on. Like they will roll back the tape.
Do they put like a really heavy gray filter on
it? Oh, often yes. 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 You have to visually denote the fact that this is a different moment in time, right, even if it was like 2 hours ago. And so I enjoyed this device being used on The Bachelor because we almost never get it. Personally, I think this should be used to like expose someone's lies when they are making shit up about someone. But in a way, this did that, but I don't think that was the intention. Like we see yet again that Thomas admitted to, after being like specifically pushed multiple times by Hunter and specifically asked, has the thought literally ever crossed your mind at any time, even for 1 second, about the possibility of being the next Bachelor? And he's like, yeah, I guess. Yeah, that was a thought that was in my brain at one point.
Like, ending up being the Bachelor is almost equally likely as ending up with the Bachelorette when you go in a season. It is almost...
It is literally.
It's not literally because sometimes they pull
sometimes
from a
they
past
pull
season
from another
or something.
Season,
but, like,
true.
Almost equally. And, you know, who wouldn't think about that? That seems odd to me. There could literally not be, like, a lower stakes confession for them to flash back to with a heavy, like, smoky filter, like they're in some grimy, grubby, evil version of the past. And the men are all really caught up thinking about this, you know?
They just don't like him.
They don't like him. I mean, that's clearly a big part of it.
Look, he's sort of a smarmy dude. I'm not particularly taken by Thomas. It's just hilarious that, like, this is the crime that they were able to latch onto. And they were like, yeah, we will run him into the ground with this confession.
They're saying, like, as Thomas runs around in the background, Hunter's saying, like, oh, it's not just wanting to be the Bachelor. There's a lot of other stuff. And James is like, yeah, it's like the insensitivity of wanting to be the Bachelor. Like, it really is. It seems like they can't put their finger on anything other than wanting to be the Bachelor. Except that he has lied to them, which is true. We've seen him lie. They were pretty low stakes lies. Like, I'm not impressed by Thomas, but the more dramatically they react to him, the more I'm like, I mean, don't we all kind of like lie a little bit now and then?
Yeah, this is like, actually this isn't that having, it's deal. Like having the opposite effect.
It's making like, me sympathetic to Thomas.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I never liked Thomas. And now I'm like, God, this guy got a raw deal. Like,
I know.
My God, guys.
I was literally like, I'm being radicalized by the excesses of the political opposition to Thomas. Like, I find that maybe I was pro-Thomas all along in my heart, but I only pursued that route because the hardliners pushed me with their crazy demands.
Exactly.
Trey's like, you don't go from wanting to be the Bachelor to falling in love with the Bachelorette in 3 weeks. Which,
I'm
like
actually...
They keep saying that, but, like, what's the proof?
Also, like, yeah, that definitely happens.
I'm sure it does. Like, they can't prove that that's a true assertion, even though they keep saying it, because it's not true. There's no evidence for it. Meanwhile, Thomas has concluded his run and he leaps a fence like a gazelle, and he goes up to Courtney, who is on this sort of outside gym pad that they have. It's like an elevated platform. It's
very, very CrossFit feeling.
Very CrossFit. It's a place where the men can have heart-to-hearts or where they can pump iron or maybe both. I prefer both. Both, in this case. I found a Men's Health article that describes what Courtney is doing as lateral lifts. So if you know what that is, envision a man staring deep into the middle distance with a face like stone as he does lateral lifts with enormous free weights.
And has a heart-to-heart. It's like this is what men need in order to be able to express emotion. They're like, if I do this very traditionally masculine thing, if I show you how big my biceps are.
Literally shirtless in literally the baking shirtless, sun.
I can also perhaps bond with another man.
Although it doesn't seem like Courtney is specifically interested in bonding with Thomas. It's almost more like Thomas, like, spotted someone who was separated from the pack and weak, and he, like, took him down. He bounded over to Courtney and was like, I'm just going to start confiding in you. And Courtney's like, I did not volunteer for this conversation, like, doing his lateral lifts the whole time. And
also, Courtney is just like, man, you really got yourself into a bad situation. I definitely don't envy you.
And that's what all of Thomas's heart-to-hearts are now. He comes up and starts talking to people, and they're just like, man, you're really fucked up, you know? And sucks to be you. And Thomas is like, yeah, it does. And they're like, yeah. But what Thomas also says is basically, I've been trying to be a politician, bad admission, and trying to say what people want to hear, also bad. He says, I've always been someone who tries to go above and beyond and uplift people. And now it seems like I'm being dishonest. But he's like, I'm really committed. I'm staying for Katie. She's worth it. And Courtney is pretty diplomatic. Like we said, he basically just says, you got yourself into this and sucks to be you. But in the moment, he says, you know, Thomas is manipulating and I had a lot of respect for him initially. I thought he was a good dude, but he's just a good talker. He doesn't respect Thomas anymore.
They're really just blown away because usually the men are not good dudes and bad talkers. So it's confusing.
And, you know, some might say that Thomas is also one of those dudes. But I guess the general standard is
It's hilarious that they're like, this man is a master manipulator.
Golden tongue.
I'm like, it's week four and he has fully flamed out, admitted that he thought about being the next Bachelor, which is like the worst crime you can commit on the show. Extremely unstrategic. Will not allow you to be the Bachelor. Like,
if he's actually trying to be the Bachelor.
He did a terrible job. He did a terrible job.
Like, he's either doing an incredibly bad job of trying to be the Bachelor, or he was consciously giving that up and renouncing it. Because saying, yeah, I've thought of wanting to be the Bachelor while you're still competing is the worst move you could possibly make. It will never happen now. So it's time for a group date. And as you may remember from last episode, Thomas was already on a group date this cycle, so he is not part of the group that heads out, and they're all excited for a break. The group is Andrew M., Christian, Connor C., Trey, Andrew S., Mike P., Josh, and Greg. Be daring in the name of love. Katie greets them. She's wearing, like, skinny khakis, a brown and white plaid jacket, and heels. How are we feeling about her styling on these dates?
Look, I think Katie's style is not style I would choose often. Sometimes there were a few moments this episode that I really liked. This was not a favorite of
mine. I think she has a lot of good cocktail party outfits. She has a lot of good gowns. But when they style her for dates, I'm often like, you're striking a very weird balance between, like, you know, yeah, like casual, like explorer wear or like cowgirl meets formal.
Because they're in the Southwest. She's from the Pacific Northwest. And I think they're trying to like integrate some of that because that's her natural style. But then you like have to add heels to every outfit.
I think it would be a better look without heels. Also, I'm not a big fan of that much brown, although I know it's very in right now.
But I think that is genuinely her style.
I guess.
She's also joked a lot on Instagram about how, like, fashion is not her is not her forte.
But like, she's getting styled. You know what I mean? Like, if I were getting styled,
but
I would want them to present me not as myself, but as having good style.
But I do think that, like, having seen, you know, we've seen so many different seasons, and the style changes pretty intensely. And I do think that they make an effort to style the leads as like an elevated version of their personal style.
I hear you, but I think that they are not sticking the landing. Like, I think that you can try to integrate all those things and still not end up with skinny khakis and like an oversized brown and white plaid jacket.
I agree. I think I think obviously Carrie Fettman, the stylist, bears some of the blame, but like, I think part of it is just like, Katie doesn't have the best style. I really like her.
I hear you. I hear you. I'm just saying that, like, if we're going to critique this as a show, we need to say this could have been executed better.
We're definitely in agreement there.
Today,
I'm not a fan.
Today's date is about their sense of humor and also honesty and also showing Katie how much they care about her, because it's truth or dare, which is actually not truth or dare. It's just like the guys have to do a bunch of embarrassing and uncomfortable stuff.
It really reminded me of like a night activity at summer camp where you would like get called up one by one and just like have to like chug something gross. Like, that was the style of date. It was only dares, and it was a very specific like low touch type of dare.
Yeah, and it's actually just simply the same date as they had on Tayshia's season when they were trying to make the single location dates work, which is the Bachelorette and her lady pals just like chill on a couch and watch as the contestants scatter around the resort and do all these dares. And then at the end, they have to eat two habaneros and propose. This is like legitimately just ripped from Tayshia's season.
They were like, it worked on one resort.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it work on another?
Also, it's treated like a race, but there is like no finish line. There's no winner. There's no reward. Why are they hurrying? Unclear to me.
I kind of enjoyed how low stakes it all seemed. Like, this felt like a break for us narratively. Like, all the dudes were just like getting along and were like lightly embarrassed.
Yeah, the guys are definitely enjoying themselves rather than freaking out, which is a nice change.
It really is.
It was, you know, later Katie says to one of the guys, like, oh, it seemed like you were all bonding during this date. And I was like, yeah, they're being hazed. Like, this is a fraternity rush ritual that's being enacted. Like, I remember doing some of this stuff when I joined a social club in college. I didn't join a club that involved quite so, you know, onerous things because I'm a wimp. But like, it's trauma bonding. Like, they're all going through these horrible experiences together, and now they're best friends. And the next 4 years are going to be epic. So Mike P is the first guy we really see doing a dare. There's a station that is all these covered platters, and they have to eat what's on the platter. He opens the platter. It's a pile of Twinkies. And this station is really just it's the most triggering thing I've ever seen. He's like, he's eating the Twinkies. He's miserable. He's like, I haven't had a carb in 7 years. He jokes that if he gets fat, Katie still has to love him.
The plates have calorie counts. Like, why? Like, I don't know. Some sort of food eating contest is like a tried and true like dare thing. But like, why are we focusing on the fact that this could have made him fat?
Right.
Like, why does that matter? And also, why the fuck are there calorie counts there? Like, that really bothered me.
That really pissed me off. It's clear that the framing is not like eating a lot of food is hard. The framing is, look at these
hot buff dudes.
Imagine them like being so gross as to eat this many calories and ruin their perfect Adonis-like bodies.
Right.
The calorie counts really upset me. And, you know, Mike is a sweetheart. He's not thinking that hard about this joke, but I do think it's these, and I've been guilty of this too, because it's so baked into our culture that like the way that relatively thin people often talk to each other involves a lot of imagined like self it like insult based on an imagined version of themselves who is fat, that they feel is safely distant from them, or being like, right. Oh, I look so fat, or oh, I'm gonna get so fat if I eat this. And it's something I try to be more conscious of now, because it's something that when I became an adult woman, like, just starts to seep in. You hear other women doing it, or other men in Mike's case, and it just seems like a way to bond with other people. And then you realize, yeah, you know, as fat activists will point out, you're using other people's actual body as like this, the butt of the joke, or this like horror,
and that's almost like, yeah, story. Like a fear tactic. Yeah. And that feels especially insidious on a show where, as we've discussed before, there are no non-thin bodies present.
Yeah. Yeah. And this date is definitely drawn directly from the same kind of cultural thinking that leads to that kind of casting, which is like, fat people are bogeyman. They aren't here where the beautiful people are. And then there is a whispering sweet nothing station, which is like a giant ear that the men have to, I guess, do some dirty talk for Katie into for a full minute. And if they stop, they have to start over. And the ear carries through like a telephone cord or something the audio to Katie and Tayshia and Caitlin, who are sitting on the couch. And so Andrew S. does some dirty talk in an English accent for Katie to hear.
He's just so committed to this bit. It will never end.
And Katie is so into it. She's like, Andrew S. has this sexy English accent. And I was not only falling, like, Caitlin and Tayshia were as well.
Is why he's committed, Claire, because it works, apparently.
I mean, then that's something that I think we definitely wouldn't have seen with Chris Harrison, is the idea of the host. Like, she's like, yeah, these other, my peers, these other girls, like, they also find this really sexy. Greg yells over to ask if they can hear what he's going to say. And they're like, no, of course not. So he starts doing a little bit where he...
I was like, is he trying?
I'm not even going to describe it. I think we have a clip of this.
Yeah. We got to hear this.
Oh, Katie. Why don't you bend on over and let me show you the 50 states.
No, please.
We got New Jersey.
Oh, please.
New York. Everything's bigger in Texas. Don't you forget about Florida now, baby.
Oh, what the?
We're gonna go nice and long and deep.
Time.
Yeah.
Oh my god, he felt good about that. What? I repeat, that was not good.
All the women are like horrified by this. Like, he sort of high fives with his partner in the dares and runs away. And they're like, oh my God, he thought that was good. That was not good. Katie's like, I'm going to have to say something to him about this. And then they holler over at him, like, how's Florida treating you? And that's when they realize that they were listening. I just felt a little squicky about this, to be honest. Like, it felt like a very high school thing, specifically the way they treated Greg. Like, it was like a three-way phone call. Like, we're going to get him to, like, admit something or do something a little embarrassing. And then it's like, surprise, all the cute girls were listening.
Oh, it was so like a three-way phone call. I wasn't upset by it. I don't think you're wrong. It seemed lighthearted enough that it didn't bother me.
It was definitely lighthearted. And hopefully most of the guys had fun with it. But I will always, I think, just feel a little gross about pressuring people to do something that is like a component of a private sexual moment in a very public way, and then to like critique Greg for doing something goofy with it and acting like he really messed up, I thought was kind of uncool. Like, what, you want him to like sincerely like try to like do a phone sex line thing with Katie right now? Like, he's being ridiculous. I related to that.
I was just more confused. I was like, what, is there a reference here? Is he trying to be Matthew McConaughey? Like, I didn't get the bit. Like, I felt like if he had committed to a goofy bit that made sense, it would have landed better. I
think
I didn't
that
get
that's
it.
Like a level of critique that doesn't make sense to me. Like, he's not a comedian. He's literally just trying to get through this stupid challenge.
It's a dumb challenge that I hate
and I think is designed to kind of sexually humiliate them.
I think at the end of the day, it was like pretty lighthearted, and she is really into Greg. So he could probably get a little bit of ribbing and it's okay.
She was willing to overlook that. that doesn't mean that I am willing to overlook.
That is fair. You hold your grudge against this date.
What I do love is making men get waxed, because I think that men expect it and they don't really understand or care how much it sucks. And so there is a waxing station. Christian, we see waxing part of Trey's butt, which if I'm Trey, like, go for a different part of the body, man. Like,
maybe Trey was thinking, I don't think so, because we see all different parts. It just, I think the card said something like one of the hairiest parts of you. So they could have chosen. But I wonder if Trey was like, at least this won't be visible. Like, the other dudes are then walking around with like a single patch of hair missing from their like legs or an arms after.
I'd ask my partner to do a cute little design, like a lightning bolt or a heart.
Christian was just like going for it. He was like, I'll be gentle. And then he like just smothered wax all over his butt.
Here's the thing. You can't be gentle about waxing. It sucks. I've been to professionals. It hurts just as much as trying to do it myself.
I think it's worse to do it yourself.
Yeah. And afterwards, Trey is really shaken. He's like, I've never had my cheeks out in front of another man in my life, and I don't plan on doing it again. I'm very vulnerable right now. I need to be held. So the date is working on Trey. It's really breaking down his defenses. And the final challenge is that they each have to eat 2 habanero peppers, get down on one knee, and propose to Katie. I loved hearing Katie talk about this. Like, she really just takes these dates very seriously. She's like, this is the ultimate test of whether a guy will do anything for me, but also enjoy it. Like, she's basically like, I want him to both enjoy doing this and also have it be the ultimate test of how much he will endure for me. He's going to suffer with a smile for her, her dream man.
I mean, and they really do. These men deliver. They're, like, out here just chomping on these habanero peppers and giving, like, heartfelt speeches while they like gently weep.
Yeah, poor Greg is really flagging. He's had a rough day. He has to swill like a whole jug of milk. And then when he proposes, he's still crying. He says, I love you so much.
Like, what a sincere, I mean, oh my God. I was like, Greg, wow, that's an intense statement.
The habanero thing is unpleasant, but I think it actually helps them in this moment because they're so distraught and like weepy that it's actually
they're just
saying the things that Katie wants to hear and that they feel like make sense in the moment without overthinking it or getting in their heads. And this is how Greg says I love you to Katie for the first time, and she's
very pleased.
She's like crying in the moment. She's like, this is the first time he said he loves me, and I'm counting it. I've decided it counts. It seems like she really wants it. Like, she's ready to hear I love you from Greg. Andrew S. seems to be proposing in an English accent.
Of course.
So here's the thing.
What else would he do?
Here's the thing about the accent. And I think Greg was doing this a little bit in his dirty talking thing. We don't hear a non-accented dirty talk portion. I think it's a distancing thing. I think that when you're talking in an accent, there's a little bit of like, I'm not really doing this. I'm not really admitting to anything. This isn't serious. I think that it creates a barrier to intimacy to a certain degree. I actually used to get really annoyed at Greg for doing accents.
That's a good point.
I don't know.
You're Greg. You're Greg, to be clear.
Yeah.
She's like, I used to get really mad at Greg Grippo from New Jersey for doing accents.
You know what? He and I have a long history. No, it's just like, it's cute when you're really into a new person and they're doing some accents and then you get further and further along and you're like, in my day-to-day life, I feel like he is sending his English representative to hang out with me. And that's confusing. I would like to see Andrew S. say more things to her that do not have this little like distance of I'm playing a character while saying this. In fairness, they are all doing fake proposals right now. most of the proposals are pretty sweet, and Katie is over the moon. She's like, this has been fun. It's drama free. I'm feeling so good about how everything is going with the guys. And the night portion is going to be about truth.
We got the dare. Now it's the truth. They didn't make it clear that those, that those two things were happening separately. But I guess now, now we know. Now we understand why they could call it truth or dare. The truth is deferred.
It's not truth or dare. It's dare, dot, 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 and truth. So the night date starts on a positive note. The men are all just loving on each other before Katie shows up. They're like, oh, what a good group. Solid dudes.
Not a Thomas in sight.
Yeah, I like pretty much all of them. I even like Greg. I know that's not a popular opinion around these parts. But,
I do too. Like,
sort of, all the things that like are like really milk toasty about him, I'm like, aw, that's so cute. Katie shows up wearing just an extremely sparkly black houndstooth jacket.
See,
dress.
This was an outfit that really worked for me. I was like, I want that houndstooth jacket dress.
I think you would be able to really pull this off just as well as Katie. Like, I don't think that's a look for everyone, but I can definitely see you in it. And Andrew S. steals her first. He pulls her to a little room with a covered platter, and she's like, oh my god, it's payback. And he's like, oh yeah, I got you a treat. It's Taco Bell and a Lunchable and some candy.
I mean, just the charcuterie plate of Katie's dreams.
It was like
charcuterie plates are an incredible, like, recurring theme within the Bachelor franchise.
It's a seduction technique, you know. It's a little pile of foods that you can feed to each other with your hands. I think that the little pink pile of bologna squares was not.
That wasn't like my style.
No,
but I don't know what Katie likes.
It seemed more like they just needed to fill in space on the board around. You know, like you have to frame the Taco Bell.
It can't be just Taco Bell.
Yeah. And so they have a nice little chat. Like, he tells her, you know, I'm just trying to be myself. I'd be the same way with you if we met in a bar. And like, I just really connect with you. I've never had a woman understand me like you. And she says, yeah, you know, it just really flows between the two of us. And they kiss. And then we get a couple sort of throwaway chats. Which
we learn essentially nothing. She talks to Andrew M. She talks to Mike P. They both pretty much just express some, you know, cliches about the things a relationship will do or the things they will do in a relationship, but without any specificity. And so we just,
yeah,
I don't know. They give us nothing.
Like Andrew M. says, you know, every relationship you have to make each other better. And I promise I'll do that with you. And I'm like, okay, so, like, what are you going to do? Like,
how? Dinner
table critiques of her performance that day? Like, it's not placed in any meaningful context here. And Mike P. says, oh, like, people talk about 50-50 in relationships, but it's really 100-100. And my whole focus would be, what does Katie need? If I have to sacrifice for that, I'll sacrifice. To me, I struggle with this framing. I think historically what this translates to is women sacrifice everything and men
are like, I'm here.
Men barely sacrifice anything and they're like, I'm doing just as much as she is. And
there are literal studies showing that what when men perceive they are like doing 50% of the labor,
yeah,
it is not.
Which is 50%. Why I feel as a woman I have to be constantly prepared to monitor whether I'm doing more than 50%, you know, for the good of everyone.
And you're like, I'm sorry, I'll really be pulling back right now because I think I've already given my 50.
Yeah. Not this week, though, because our son is homesick from school and Greg has been doing like all of the childcare so I could work on this podcast. So I'm going to have to do some catching up. Thanks for the reminder, Mike P. Greg sits down and is like, I was so nervous for this date. I have a weak stomach. You know, I wasn't sure what I'd be eating. I'm astonished that we don't get a shot of him puking after everything we see him eat. And then they sort of joke about like, oh, I'm a little mad at you. Oh, it's our first
fight. Look how cute it is. I'm like, I know it's not your first fight, because you're being really cute about it. And a real first fight, like, is not cute.
Yeah. And so Greg is basically gushing. He's like, it's hard with the other guys, but I think about you all the time. I love our connection. She's like, I also love it. And then Greg, fishing for a little affirmation, says, what makes you so sure? And she's like, I'm not. Like, I guess I didn't like say I was sure, and I'm not. But, you know, you're great. You're not trying to impress me. You're just being yourself, and I'm starting to fall for you. And they make out.
I'm calling it now. Like, this guy is going to be, like, I think final.
We're two. Definitely going home to New Jersey, like, without 100%.
A doubt. 100%.
And Katie is feeling so good after all these conversations. She's feeling empowered by these strong relationships. We are going to take a quick ad break, and I'm sure when we return, Katie will still be feeling very good and empowered about all of her relationships.
If you, like the two of us, are just always desperate to bring more coziness into your life, may we suggest Barefoot Dreams, especially now because the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary.
With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket.
I mean, there's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times.
If there's anything I trust more than Oprah's favorite things list, it's 6 of Oprah's favorite things list. I mean, come on. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as their collection of ultra soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are made with premium materials.
And their products make perfect gifts too.
I'm a huge fan of just swaddling myself in a big cozy robe. So I know, Emma, I'm very excited for the Barefoot Dreams robe that is heading my way right now. I was so excited to pick it out, and I'm so excited to try it on. Like, the perfect cozy robe.
I'm so excited too.
Oh my God, it's going to change my life, I think.
We'll just be swaddling ourselves in coziness 100% of the time. And I think we can all agree that, like, that is the lifestyle which we deserve and to which we aspire. Thank you, Barefoot Dreams.
For Love to See It with Emma and Claire listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code LTSI15.
Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams' soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life. Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have, like, kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like, maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
Anyone who's been listening to this podcast for a while, or even not that long, knows that we love Article. I mean, honestly, I'm looking around my home right now. Coffee tables from Article. That lovely chair out on my deck, Article. Our big console, Article. My bed frame, Article. This is an Article household.
It is. And it was an inspiration to me. We finally got our first Article piece of furniture recently, our new couch. And my husband and I are both constantly just like, how did we live before this couch? This is such an improvement over what we had before. It's so comfortable. It just seems to get more comfortable every day. I mean, it's the couch you dream of.
And the reason that we have both been able to find ideal furniture on Article is because Article believes in delightful design for every home.
And thanks to their online-only model, they have some really delightful prices, too.
Their curated assortment of mid-century modern, coastal, industrial, Scandi, and boho designs makes furniture shopping simple.
And their team of designers are all about finding that perfect balance between style, quality, and price, because we all want the best of all of those three things united in one piece of furniture, right?
Plus, they're dedicated to thoughtful craftsmanship that stands the test of time and, you know, looks good doing it.
Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
To claim, visit article.com/LTSI, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout.
That's article.com/LTSI for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
And we're back. And yes, Katie does still feel very empowered
but not
about
for
all
long.
Of her relationships. But not for long, because Trey has some concerns. And yes, they are about the devil who must not be named. Thomas.
He's feeling like he's got to address it with Katie at this point. Which, where did this come from? Like, everyone's feeling good, chatting, having a nice time with Katie. They're bonding. They're brothers
Trey
for life
Trey had a little
now.
Sidebar with a producer, and they were like, Trey, remember how you were very concerned? You should probably share that with the group.
What did you think about, Trey, when Katie brought up honesty earlier during the day? Did that make you think about anyone who maybe she doesn't have all the information about? So Trey is bringing this up with the group. And Andrew S. emerges as the opposition here. He does not want to disrupt Katie's night by telling her more, you know, drama about a guy in the house who might not be there for the wrong reasons. He's like, we handled it in the group. We talked to Thomas. Katie's happy. Let's just leave it alone. But the other guys all kind of line up behind Trey. And so Christian says, you know, like, he's manipulating us. Like, we can't just, like, let this go. And Andrew's like, oh, so you let him manipulate you. Like, fine. He didn't manipulate me. And this was a risky thing to say, because now Trey and the other guys think that Andrew's perspective here is very selfish, that it's all about how he's affected. It shows a lack of care about Katie and how she's going to be affected. And Andrew's counter is like, well, Katie's going to figure this out in her own time without spoiling this group date and distracting her from her relationships with each of us. And he's like, you're being selfish. You're upset that Thomas lied to you personally, and so you're going to ruin Katie's night over it. Trey's like, oh, Katie will look back and be disappointed that you valued 15 minutes with her over her happiness.
I was like, okay, Trey, whoa, taking it a little far. I do think that Andrew took the wrong tack here in being like, oh, you're the idiot that got manipulated and he didn't manipulate me. But what we are seeing here is that, like, Andrew has a point that, like, something like this tends to derail a whole bunch of events, like, in the present and moving forward. And we see that this does, in fact, then dominate the rest of the episode and the rest of, you know, Katie's interactions.
Yeah, they're having this sort of debate that's like, what do we owe to Katie? What do we owe to each other? They all see what they're doing as kind of the generous thing to do for
magnanimous
Katie.
When in fact they're all being selfish. Andrew is operating from a place of like, I have a great connection that I feel sure about with Katie. I know I'm going to be kept around and I want the time to explore that. Some of these other guys who feel less, you know, certain about their connections are like, but Thomas is getting roses. He's taking up spots that could go to one of us.
Yeah.
He is a liar and we need to make sure that Katie eliminates him.
Right. And if you're a guy who maybe isn't getting that much attention from Katie, it might not seem like the worst thing to shake things up, because the status quo for you is not great. Like, maybe somehow you'll be jolted into a higher position in the course of what's about to unfold. So Trey, with the backing of most of the guys, decides to take this to Katie in his one-on-one time. And he sits down with Katie, and she's like, oh, I love the lack of drama on this date. I have so many good guys. And Trey's like, yeah, yeah, no, that's great. Like, I love talking with you. I can flirt with you, enjoy it, whatever. That's great. However, I really came here to talk to you about something you need to know. Thomas isn't here for you. There's a pattern of manipulative behavior. And Katie's like, all right, tell me more. And Trey tells her that Thomas admitted after being asked 4 times that he wanted to be bachelor. And she's like devastated, but she's like, this is, you know what? This is something I 1000% want to know.
In this retelling, I feel like Trey has exaggerated the reality of what happened, right? Like, he doesn't mention that, like, specifically Thomas admitted to having the fleeting thought that perhaps one option in many options could be that he would be the next bachelor. He was like, he admitted that he came here to be the bachelor.
Right. Like, the framing makes a big difference here. Like, there's a big difference between what everyone feels, I think, going on the show, which is like, maybe it'll work out with this person. Oh, wouldn't it be crazy if, like, I could end up being bachelor, I guess, versus if I go in the show and play my cards right, I will be the bachelor.
Right.
Yeah. So Trey obviously frames it in a way that is more convincing for the case he wants to make. And Katie receives this the way I think he intends it to be received. And she says, you know, lots of people come on open-minded to love, to other things. But wanting to be bachelor, that means you are never open to falling in love. Which, how is it, how does it mean that? To me, like, if you're the bachelor, you're literally going to fall in love as the bachelor. That's kind of the goal either way. So, you know, I guess there's just a lot of assumptions being made by Katie and the other guys here that, like, if it ever occurred to you to be the lead, that means that you have ill intent and that you are incapable of falling in love or ever, like, turning the ship around. And that just assumes facts, not in evidence, to me.
I agree.
But they can't let the taint of ambition come into this pure world. It would ruin everything. So she tells the producer, like, I liked Thomas. I really did. And now I feel like it was a lie. Back in the group, Trey's like, Katie took this really well. I think getting a rose would affirm that I did the right thing by being honest. Oh, interesting, Trey, that you bring up the rose. Is it possible that that was a motivation for you? Like, the fact that they know that Katie...
Trey is pure. Trey is pure of soul. He only did this for the collective good. He is a martyr, and we must treat him as such.
If I were one of the other guys who backed him up, and then what happens is that Trey gets the rose. Katie is like, thank you for coming to me with that. Here's
she is aggressively pro-narc.
If I'm the other guys, I'm like, I should have made the move. Like, I could have gotten a rose and been safe for another week just by selling out Thomas.
Yeah, like, his biggest defender is Christian. And then, like, Christian goes home this episode anyway.
Yeah, Christian's just like, man, I should have done that. But, like, can't hate the player for playing the game well, you know? He's like, respect to that move. And so Trey's thrilled. Like, this is exactly what he wanted. He went to Katie about the guy he doesn't like and wants out of the house. He was rewarded with a rose. I think Katie has essentially, like, placed a bounty now on every relationship she has in the house. Like, every good relationship she has in the house is now really vulnerable to guys trying to get a rose on the backs of that.
This is the point that Andrew S. explicitly makes at one point, I think. He says, like, it's scary to imagine, like, your relationship is then at the whims of other people. And I thought that that was a really good point. Like, there's now very actively an incentive for men to exaggerate situations and to, like, play up potential points of conflict so that Katie will start eliminating people.
Right. It's not just like, I won't penalize you for coming to me with this. I won't shoot the messenger. It's like, bring it to me and you will be paid in a rose. And yeah, Andrew is just beside himself. Trey is feeling very good about what he did. Andrew's like, oh, I don't, you know what? She took it well, but, like, you still killed the whole vibe. Buzz Killington, he says. That's his name for Trey. And they head back to the house. So the other guys are also thrilled. And they're basically like, it's a matter of time for Thomas now to get sent home. And at one point, Courtney is like, will she even want to give Thomas another chance? Will she want to hear him out? Like, he's just going to tell her a bunch of baloney. And who likes baloney?
Not I, Courtney.
Apparently Katie does, based on that little charcuterie board we saw earlier. Meanwhile, Katie is sipping coffee in her room. She feels like a fool. She saw Thomas going far. Funny thing about all of this, she is wearing an outfit from a date.
From, like, the day before.
Like 2 days before. Because there was a one-on-one in between. She's wearing the outfit she wore on the group date with Nick, which was at least a few days ago at this point. And in other words, before she heard about Thomas. But she is very much being portrayed through voiceover as taking this time with a coffee to think about Thomas and how he has betrayed her.
There is a lot of creative editing going on in this episode. I believe that Nick said on his podcast that, like, by the time his date had come around, he knew Blake was there. So clearly the Blake arrival
spoiler.
And this whole conversation... Oh, God. Oh, I'm so sorry. I know that all of you had no idea Blake was returning until this moment. I am so sorry to have spoiled that massive reveal for you.
So someone knocks on the door. It's Tayshia, the last person Katie expected to see. This is not the last time during this episode that Katie will say that she is seeing the last person she expected to see, despite the fact that there are a lot of hints that it might be that person. For example, Tayshia is one of the two co-hosts of the show she's on, so she seems like a pretty likely person to be at the door. And Tayshia tells her someone from her past has reached out to her. Someone who felt passionately that he and Katie would be an amazing match. He's a wonderful guy. He didn't come at the beginning. He wasn't sure if he was ready to be back in the Bachelor hell. But I can't tell you who it is. Not even a hint. He can't stop thinking about you. Ha ha. Go get him, girl. And Katie is every single emotion right now. She is literally every single emotion.
Literally.
She is them. She is just like a whirlwind of emotion. There's nothing left for logic or facts or editing. Sequence, logic. And meanwhile, there's a man out there, a burly man who is strapping on jeans and bracelets and a bomber jacket to look beautiful for Katie. I wonder who it could be. No one's mentioned it on this podcast or anywhere else.
No, I have no idea. I mean, frankly, I have full amnesia. I watched it and I have no idea who it is. My breath is bated.
We're just going to have to keep reading the notes.
Yeah.
So Katie stomps on down the gravel path to the big reveal spot. There is just a hearty, beefy suitor waiting for her. He turns around. Oh my gosh, Blake, she cries. Blake, I'd forgotten just how beardy and toothy Blake is. Like, he has very toothy teeth. He has a very jaw-y jaw. He has a very beardy beard.
Is it the jaw that makes me confused by his facial hair? Like, I was staring at it last night being like, what? Why? Okay, I was like, it is a full beard, but why does it, like, give the impression of being a chin strap?
I think that it is more groomed on the sides and more bushy at the chin.
And underneath, I think what it is that also, like, there's this, like, gap of skin between his lip and the beard that I'm sure is just genetic, but, like, it to me, like, it gives the essence. It gives the essence of a chin strap, and it's upsetting to me. And
I just don't, definitely unfair. When you have such a sturdy jaw, like lower jaw, to add on a beard really emphasizes
it's a lot of look.
I think that Blake's whole thing, just like, to me, he looks like when you draw a cartoon of a man who's supposed to be like uber masculine and you make his jaw just like the size of a mountain. It's like Gaston or something, you know. You're like, he can't just have a human sized chin. It has to be the manliest
now
chin.
I'm picturing Gaston with a beard.
Oh, God. That's what he looks like.
And look, this When I first realized that Blake was returning, which again we have seen teased before, I was like, ugh, I just didn't have the best feeling about him from Claire's season, Claire and Tayshia's season. Like, his intensity came off a little creepy at times to me. So I was like more charmed by this interaction than I thought I would be, frankly.
Yeah, it's clear that they have some chemistry. She is not unhappy to see him, despite the obvious sensitivity of bringing a new person on mid-season. And he starts with basically an apology, which is, as you noted, Emma, a good move. He says, like, I know this throws a wrench in your whole situation, but I knew it was the only way, except for maybe coming on at the beginning, and I just didn't feel like it. And he's like, you know, I love how bold you are, how playful, open, your humor, I relate to it. And Katie tells us that she DM'd with him after her season, that he reached out to commend her for her bold personality. And she's like, he's a very handsome guy. You know, well-intended people can disagree. And she's like, you're the last person I thought I would see. Which really, like, a guy from Tayshia's season is there. And you're like, I bet it's not the guy who reached out to DM me about how great I am.
She admitted on Twitter last night that she thought it would either be Blake or Dr. Joe.
Oh, man, Dr. Joe, that would be fun.
I know. I love
now
Dr.
Joe. Now I'm sad. Bring back Dr. Joe.
I think he's going to be on Paradise, actually, yeah, which I'm excited about.
That's good. I want the best for him, but also I want more Dr. Joe. So Katie is very flustered by all of this, but she's also clearly interested in Blake. Like, she's like, do I see something with you? Like, maybe.
She's basically like, yeah I could.
But she's like, I have these good relationships already. I don't want to mess those up by making them mad at me, essentially, by bringing you in late. And she also points out, you know, I would be your third bachelorette. And there's already been a lot of house drama about, like, the right reasons shit, which there was already, even though Thomas hasn't happened yet. The whole Carl thing was also right reasons. And Blake is like, I wish we could have met in any other circumstance, but you check boxes no one else has. I would regret it forever if I didn't come. But it's true. She would be his third bachelorette. He made a really hard pivot from Claire to Tayshia, which was a tricky move to pull off, because he was one of the guys who was really gung-ho about Claire. And now he's back for, like, literally the next bachelorette. It does look a little bit like you'll just go after any bachelorette at this point. But I like their vibe together, despite this.
I think it's a much better... to me, this chemistry felt much more natural than his chemistry with either Claire or Tayshia.
Yeah, I feel like...
this just felt, like, off.
There was an element with Claire, I remember, of being like, well, I did the thing that, like, I reached out to you.
I prepared for this. I reached out to you. I, like, researched you. Like, it was a lot.
Yeah.
He's toned it down with this entrance, which was wise.
And he tells her, basically, she's saying, I don't know if I want to risk this with you. And he's like, well, I promise if we connect the way I think we will, if I make it to the end, we'll be engaged. Basically, he's like,
I'm not here to fuck around.
Yeah, it's the Blake Moynes engagement guarantee. He's like, you can count on it. I will beat any offer. And Katie's like, you're a troublemaker. So I need some time to think about this. And she departs. And, you know, it seems like she only thinks about it for like 12 hours. As we can kind of glean, it's actually like 3 to 5 days. So in the meantime, she still has to get through the long-awaited rose ceremony and deal with Thomas. So we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with that rose ceremony.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
And you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week.
Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Just heat and savor the good stuff.
Plus, you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. And you can pause or reschedule your deliveries to suit your lifestyle.
They're celebrating Earth Day all month long at Factor. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals.
Especially since I've been back from my travels, I've gotten really out of practice with my normal meal prep. And so Factor has been really helping me kind of bridge that gap, know that I have healthy, whole meals in my fridge ready to eat when I need them.
Head to factormeals.com/LTSI50 and use code LTSI50 to get 50% off your first month, plus 20% off your next month.
That's code LTSI50 at factormeals.com/LTSI50. 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit, and I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
Spelled BABBEL.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
And we're back, and the guys at the house are still plotting Thomas's demise. Remember, we were with Blake, but now we pivot back to Thomas.
We took a little trip back in time to Blake, and now we're back right where we were before. Aaron, as we may remember, sort of initiated the Thomas situation. And he's doing a lot of narrating just to keep this anti-Thomas crusade going.
He's also reflecting on the global catastrophe that is climate change.
Yeah, he says, it's global warming. He's sitting on an ice cap. It's shrinking every day. The seas are rising. And I don't think he knows how to swim, which is a really a striking moment where we learn that Thomas both believes in and actually identifies with global warming.
He's gleeful.
He's excited for the mass extinction event of Thomas and possibly all human and animal life on Earth. Meanwhile, Andrew S., we do see briefly, like, connect with Thomas and fill him in on the drama on the group date. And once again, just, like, a boy chat for Thomas where a guy basically is just like, well, you fucked up, man. I think you know you fucked up. And Thomas is like, well, I don't know. Everything I've said that's getting freaked out about now just seems like kind of rational thinking to me. And the thing is that I kind of agree. Except Same. For the lies, which are kind of small and dumb. But, like, he does have to take accountability for those. But a lot of the other stuff that people are really fixated on just seems like him admitting to some rational stuff that he should have kept to himself because people weren't going to be rational about
it. He's just – and the funny thing is that they're all framing him, again, as this, like, master manipulator. And I'm like, this guy is just, like, really not tactical.
Yeah, it's like literally
he's incorrectly tactical. All of his like, I don't know. All of his like shots have been fired in the wrong direction.
Yeah, he's good solely at seeming sympathetic in one-on-one conversations. Is that enough to make someone a master manipulator? I think you've got to have a plan beyond that. You know, Meanwhile, Tayshia and Caitlin come to Katie's suite for another one of these little girl chats that are filling out the runtime of this episode, and which I find as relaxing as a spa day for my brain. And Katie is trying to decide, like, does Thomas deserve a second chance? And Tayshia and Caitlin don't seem on board with that. She sort of fills them in on what happened. And Caitlin's like, well, there's one way not to be the Bachelor, and that's to tell everyone that you want to be the Bachelor, which is an excellent point. Yeah. I'm glad someone made it on screen.
Except that she seems to be almost being like, yeah, what an idiot.
Right. And it's,
he's the worst.
Is he an idiot?
Like, no, but that's actually a good point.
He can't be an idiot and be such a master manipulator. It's got to be one or the other. And Tayshia says, you know, at the end of the day, he was thinking about using her to propel himself. And Katie admits that before this, she was picturing hometowns with him, which I want to remember because later she says some things about her gut that I'm going to want to assess through a critical lens. But basically, the consensus that Tayshia and Caitlin are joining is that Thomas is just a manipulative dude. He must go. Also, I just think it's crazy that Katie literally is the Bachelorette after going on The Bachelor, and she and everyone around her who did this, like, including Caitlin and Tayshia, who both did the same thing, are acting like it's like a huge character flaw to ever consider being the lead after appearing on a season. Just want to flag how weird this world is that they have to operate using this impossible dream logic that doesn't connect.
No, it's like you must never consider it until the moment you are approached to do it. And then,
like,
you must
2 weeks after you're cut from the show.
You must very quickly decide that, yes, this is something you're willing to pursue and are prepared to pursue, even though you have, of course, never thought about it before.
The only good bachelorette, like the only good politician, is someone who has to be convinced to do it. They never sought this out. You know, they don't want power.
It was just bestowed.
It was bestowed. So it's time for the cocktail party, or one would think it was time for the cocktail party. The men are all assembled in their Sunday best, and they're looking forward to finally getting some time with Katie. They're hoping that Thomas will be gone by the cocktail party or quickly into it.
Because they haven't seen him in a while. It's been a while. Thomas isn't there.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's gone home. And then we see Thomas just roaming the halls of the hotel in his real estate agent muted red blazer.
This blazer the just guy, really signals, you know, I'm in uniform at some sort of upscale establishment or a real estate agent. Like, there's just no other way to enter. Like, he could
honestly
be taking.
He really seems like a smarmy realtor.
He really does. I could see him on a yard sign.
A billboard.
Yeah, or a billboard. Yeah. So he's decided he needs to talk to Katie, because if he doesn't bring it up, it will seem like he just, on some level, thinks that the claims about him are true, which is some tortured logic. But he's decided to talk to her. Here he is. Katie is clearly cocktail party ready, full makeup, stunning silver sequin dress. She does not look happy to see him. But Thomas decides to take a tack that I'm curious what you think about it. He decides to go in not seeming as though he feels guilty or abashed, but he comes in like, I'm here to take care of you. How are you doing? I'm still kind of the protector here.
I thought that initial open was like weird.
Yeah, he's trying to assume a non-supplication type role in this conversation and maintain a certain like power level, I think.
Right. I did understand him sort of just being like, yeah, I'm going to like not lie. I'm going to cop to it and tell you what I said. Like, I think that was a more like I understood why he took that tack, like rather than trying to double down or lie about what had happened, which I frankly think was smart. But he also goes on like a weird monologue where he talks about.
Right. So Katie says
he's been. Yeah.
So he basically is like, a lot happened this week. I wanted to check on you. And she's like, yeah, like
What do you think happens, Thomas?
Yeah, fill me in.
Weird fucking opener.
Yeah, and this
is when he thought she might do that for him. He thought she might do the like hard work for him.
Yeah, exactly. Like she might just be like, "Yeah, I know," and turn it into like an emotional bonding moment instead of having to go through the whole like apology and stuff. So this is when Thomas sets off on his explanation. He says, you know, I know things are being said about me. I'm not close with the guys. It's been really hard. I've had to sit back while my character gets demonsterized. You know what?
Okay.
It sounds like we're being rude. So I think we have a clip that
Let's play a clip.
Demonsterized.
No, I have no idea what he's trying to say here.
No idea. Like,
I feel like we're reaching the point. It's like the a moment of saying, well, like, she's going to know what I mean no matter what word I use here. So I'm just going to say some syllables that sound like a smart word.
It's like ostracized, demonized, demolished. Like, demonized is kind
demonstrated.
Of the closest, but it didn't...
Destroyed?
Really, like... Destroyed, ostracized. The problem is like none. I guess your character can, you can be demonized, but it's weird to be like my character was demonized. I don't even know what he was going
it's
for
just,
here.
He's
is my
charging
point.
Down the barrel of the sentence. Look, I'm a podcaster. I've been there, probably on this very podcast,
same.
Where I know I'm going to need a word that signifies a certain something, but the word isn't coming. And so you just throw out a grab bag of syllables that sound sort of similar to what you're thinking. And you're like, that sounds like a word that means the thing that I know I mean. And everyone's going to know what I mean. Like, obviously he's saying I've had to sit back while my character gets destroyed. But given his claim of being like an intimidatingly good talker, not a shining moment for him. So he's like, I'm going to fight for you. I'm not going to walk away no matter what anyone says. You're the, you know, if you're the person for me and I'm the person for you, like, I'm going to be here. And Katie says, well, I was told you wanted to be the next Bachelor.
And he's like, yes, I did say I had thought about being the next Bachelor because I was literally asked.
He's like, I didn't know you. And so, of course, I wasn't convinced and, like, determined to specifically fall in love with you. I just thought, you know, that's a thing that, like, happens when you go on the show sometimes.
Right, and he says, it didn't seem crazier than coming into this and falling in love. And that's what's actually happening. And I was like, frankly, that's a good point.
Like,
it doesn't seem crazier than falling in love.
The way that he is having to respond to these wild accusations does make these rebuttals seem very convincing. And I should be going back to what I know is true, which is when they did interact without this drama going on, it was all sweet talk,
smarm.
Nothing, and smarm. So, like, it's not, I don't really believe that he is that in love with her, but
neither do I.
That,
but like,
that seems more evident from what happened before than anything we've learned from this.
Right, like, I don't trust him, but not because of this.
Right, I don't trust him because they would sit down and have conversations where he was just like, the way I feel when I'm with you, it's hard to describe. I'll buy a house anywhere you want. And I'm like, we've never seen you have a substantive
exchange
of sentences.
He's like, I'll fight for you till the end. What's meant to be will be. It's like, what the fuck are you saying?
Make a joke with each
other. That's
what
makes me not trust you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no banter. He's never said like any specific things he likes about her. But then, of course, the thing that she's suspicious of is the fact that he like had a really rational thought.
Yeah. Which is that he might one day be in her position, which she thinks is such a psychotically awful thing to do. And he says, you know, none of the guys can say they never thought about being the Bachelor when they came in. And she's furious.
She's furious.
How could he impugn
this?
Them by accusing them of being willing to do the thing that she did? And she says, I can confidently say that there are men in the house who have zero intentions of ever becoming the Bachelor. And I mean, what do you say to that if you're Thomas? He's like, well, me too. Like, I feel that way.
Like,
I'd sign something
sure.
right now to attest to that. I would sign away my right to ever be the Bachelor. The only thing that gets me through this is the opportunity to be with you. and she's struggling a little bit. She's like, you're so perfect. You say what I want to hear. You're Prince Charming. But this is just a lot. It's so much.
I was just like, Katie, you need to examine why you think this man is and ever was Prince Charming. And also the entire complex behind the very idea and symbolism of Prince Charming. But that's perhaps a conversation for another day.
He just clearly has a very powerful in-person effect that is not, it typically doesn't translate in full force.
Yeah,
to the
there, no, there are definitely people I feel like that we've been confused by, and then you like meet one of these guys in person, yeah. You're like, oh yeah, yeah.
You
yeah,
imagine
yeah.
Like the,
charm.
The full force of their like approval and interest shining on you, and you're like, I can see how that would be powerful if you're a person who has that degree of charisma and force of personality, one to one, that can be really intoxicating. So I presume that's what's happening, to be generous to Katie here. And Thomas kind of closes out by being like, well, I don't know how this works. I don't say the right things. I don't have the right answers, but that's okay. Cause with you, I don't feel like I need to be that person. It makes me feel special.
And she's like, okay, we're done here. Yeah. I have to get through the rose ceremony. So like, please be on your way. And we then learn that like, this has all been taking place over the course of what seems to be like at least 3 hours, where all of the men have been dressed in their suits, sitting on the couch in like the main gathering room, just like waiting for Katie to show up. And so they are maximally pissed.
Yeah. So Thomas walks in and tells them, in that sort of announcey way that people always have to do when they come in and tell the whole group they've done something that they're not going to be happy about. He walks in, he's like, so I was just with Katie. I talked to her. We had a hard conversation about the fact that once I thought maybe it's possible that I could be The Bachelor if I start going on this franchise. And I just wanted to take care of that ahead of time. I didn't want to take more time away from your conversations tonight. And Kristen says, it's midnight, brother. They're like, it's too late. Like, what do you like?
They're like, we've been sitting here since 9. You took away the time.
Yeah.
The time has been taken.
You're trying to get out of this on a technicality. Like, the cocktail party hasn't started yet because you delayed it by 3 hours by doing this. And in the process, actually did take up almost the whole cocktail party.
Oh, God.
The men are furious. Hunter is like, we don't even know what to believe. Did this conversation even happen? Which we're really in conspiracy theory territory.
I was
here.
Like, guys, take it down a notch. I know you're like hangry, which I would be too. I hate being made to sit around. Another reason I would do so poorly on this show. Like, I love to sleep and I hate sitting around. So I'd be screwed.
I love sitting around. On. So that part would be good. I mean, the moment where Hunter says that is just so funny to me, because what else would be happening during those 3 hours? Katie just doesn't feel like coming.
And yet it's still Thomas's fault. Yeah. And I guess they're thinking like maybe he said something crazy and convinced her right. of a lie. But like we just saw it and we're like, he just actually did have the conversation he just told you.
Yeah.
He was having.
Maybe instead of admitting to everything, he was seducing her with his charming smile and his red blazer. Meanwhile, the drama starts to spread into a full group fight at this point. Andrew S. is like, I knew this would happen. Trey talked to Katie, and now this is all, the cocktail party's been ruined. Some guys might go home because of this. They don't have roses. Thomas, you fucked up. You wasted our time by going to her right before the party. It's a ripple effect. It's created a ripple effect.
He's like, I said it would be a ripple effect, and here
what do you see?
Is the ripple. Here's the ripple.
Aaron says, well, what would you have done? Just not told Katie the information that you had? That's kind of what the guys all, aside from Andrew S., seem to be saying. Like, what are we going to do? We had to tell her. And Aaron says, you can't leave it to guesswork. And Andrew's like, you're leaving it to guesswork. He's still here. And Thomas is there for all of this. He's watching them. The vibe to me was like I was watching like an action comedy where there is a team of assassins like bickering over their wounded but extremely alive and conscious target.
Yes, that is so accurate.
It's like high comedy. And so they're yelling at each other, you know, be respectful, don't yell at me. Of course, Katie chooses this moment to enter, looking stunning, if a little annoyed. And she says, Thomas, I'm sorry you're ostracized in the house. I'm sorry for being late. I don't even want a toast or anything. I'm going to do my best here. And that's
like,
all I can do.
She's like, I'm fucking tired. Let's just do this.
Let's get
we
through it.
We have to get through it. Let's like, come on. Come chat with me. So she starts, you know, having some conversations.
She's a professional. She's going to have the conversations that she's obligated to do. So she sits down with Brendan, and his time with her is indicative of what many of the conversations will be like, which is he sits down and is like, if there's anything you want to ask me about Thomas, I'm here for you. Like,
and she's like, no, bro, I'm good.
She's like, I just want to be in the moment with you.
He's like, I like you. I definitely like you. I like your qualities. Can't name what any of them are, but you have qualities. Like, you're a sweetheart, just a real sweetheart. And no bullshit.
They do not have an intimate body language.
There is not 1 ounce of chemistry between these two people.
The moment when she's like, I just want to be in the moment with you and connect. And he's like, yeah, so I like you.
I like you.
Your qualities. He had nothing prepared for an actual conversation
between
them.
No, he was
them.
Like, I have more to say about Thomas.
It's like, we can connect
over
Thomas.
And unfortunately, that was derailed. Then, yeah, we see her chat with Justin. They all want to talk about Thomas. They're all here to be angry at Thomas, not really to connect with her.
Yeah, except for Michael,
who I love.
He's such a sweetheart. He's thinking of Katie and how hard it is for her to deal with Thomas. Ugh. And he's like, you know what? We all care about Katie. We can deal with it differently. That's fine. Let's just focus on her experience and how hard it's going to be for her to find a husband while all this is happening.
Michael, I love you. You're great.
He's strong dad energy here.
Yeah.
So he sits down with Katie and is like, I just am imagining life outside of this with you. Like, that's how natural I feel with you. And she's like, well, I have already begun to wonder, how attached is Michael to Ohio, where his child was born and where his life is? Probably
he does not answer this. He's like, wow, I'm so touched that you're thinking that far ahead. I was like, buddy, she really doesn't want to move to Ohio.
Yeah.
That's what she's thinking.
Well, I got to say, you marry someone with a kid, pretty strong chance you're going to probably have to move to where they are.
I know.
Where their kid
is growing up. Katie has some like wishful thinking. She's like, maybe he's just like not an Ohio fan.
Yeah. Listen, it's possible. And they make out, you know, conversation for another day. And this has uplifted her so much that she's ready to make her decision and commence the rose ceremony. So meanwhile, Thomas is alone.
Did you notice that the camera did an incredibly shady, like, close-up on a sign outside of the, like, random conference room that he's in, and it just says, relaxation room.
I feel like they want us all to know that they are not super psychologically torturing these guys. They're like, we have a relaxation room. Like, it's 3 a.m., but we have a relaxation room. They can go in there and relax whenever they want.
Gave me very extreme nap room in our newsroom at HuffPost vibes, where I used to go to cry.
Which is what Thomas is doing. He's like crying, relaxing.
He's crying on the inside.
He's like, the house is turned on me. They're out for blood. He's being cancel cultured right now. And Katie is his boss. Is she going to cave to the masses?
Cancel culture run amok, mm-hmm. I say.
Yeah.
This has really turned me.
I'm ready to sign any open letter that Barry Weiss wants to send to me at this point. Aaron is saying, you know, at this point, if Thomas stayed, I would take it personally. Katie doesn't really have a lot of, like, this is where it starts to turn. I thought it was really kind of beautiful and clean and nice how the guys all came together as one to say one simple thing, which is Carl is lying. That lie is causing unnecessary drama. And we are in a very clear, direct, simple, uncomplicated way, just refuting that lie. And just so you know. And now it's all devolved into the guys being like, well, if I don't like this guy, I should have the power to prevent Katie from dating him. Like, they think they're in charge now.
Yeah, the vibe has completely shifted in a way that I really hate.
This is why you can't let a man have any power in a relationship. That's the problem. That goes to their head immediately. They're like, I'm the boss. There are still like 15 of you, buddy. Like, you're not the boss. You're the worker bees on this show. Hierarchies matter. I'm spiraling. Let's continue. Katie, at this point, feels this energy. She's like, there's so much negativity around Thomas. I really have no choice. I have to send him home. So they line up. Katie thanks them all for being honest and showing up for her that night. This is clearly ringing alarm bells for Thomas, because why would she thank everyone who has been bad-mouthing him to her and thank them for their honesty?
Like, he's really hoping for like some miracle to occur.
So he decides this is his last chance. So he steps forward, breaks the line, and says that he just wants to like openly apologize before the ceremony for any hint that he was there for the wrong reasons, and to all the guys for any time that he seemed to disrespect them or diminish the value they have as men, presumably on the resale market. They're just not going to be able to sell now that Thomas is next to them. You know, they look much less appealing. So he steps back into line, and Katie begins to hand out roses. Hunter, Greg, Justin, Brendan, Andrew S., Aaron, Mike P., James, Josh, Courtney, Andrew M., we are down to the final rose, and Katie picks it up, and she says, Thomas.
A shock ripples through the crowd. Aaron's like, oh shit. Justin, of course, gives an incredible wide-eyed reaction. His facial expressions are just so incredibly memeable. It is a real gift.
I'm starting to forget what Justin looks like when he's not giving a wide-eyed reaction shot. Like, it seems like every 30 seconds they're cutting to that. And then they do an ad break. When we return from this incredibly pointed ad break, I wonder what's going to happen next. Thomas walks up to Katie, and she takes a huge step back.
She's like, do not come near me. And this is her moment, like the way we saw with like Claire Crawley, like amping herself up to tell off a man. This is Katie's moment. Yeah. She says, you told me things I wanted to hear. What I learned about you tonight is you're selfish, unkind, and a liar. Your bachelor audition ends tonight. So get out. And we see it intercut with like Greg and Justin and like some of the other men just like slack jawed and shocked and
my queen,
our bachelorette has done a savage move. And this is, I mean, it is pretty savage. She like, they've never done this before. So he really thought he was getting that rose. And she's just like, fuck you, Thomas.
This was too mean for me. Unless there were crimes that were not depicted.
I agree. I was like, I love this move. But like, the punishment does not fit the crime. I was like, when did you learn that he was unkind?
Yeah.
Like, what did he do?
I guess just like being selfish and a liar is unkind.
Unkind?
Two other flaws makes an unkind. I don't know. It's possible that she's right, but it's also from the evidence on offer, I think quite possible that she's not right. And that's just like a really brutal thing to do to a guy or a girl or anyone.
It was brutal. It was very brutal. And again, I love a good like telling off, but I want it to be earned. Yeah. And this felt just like, really? For this dude?
Yeah, it didn't seem like the moment. I saw some comparisons to like Hannah B and Luke P at the rose ceremony after she had finally kind of decided to get
like,
rid of him.
But Luke P did some like really horrific shit.
Had a lot of well documented like abusive behavior towards her by that point. And that's just not the situation that Thomas is really in, at least for us as a viewer. And so it didn't really land for me in the end. Caitlin and Tayshia come in to say that the guys who didn't get roses have to leave. So also leaving, Christian, which actually makes me sad.
I know. I really grew to like Christian.
He has a really fun energy with some of the other guys in the house, like his bro time with Trey during the first, it was very sweet.
Also, like David, who we hardly heard from,
but who's extremely like, handsome,
so beautiful.
Like I forgot he was there, and then they would cut to him.
I was like, who's that hot who's that guy? Really oh, David.
And Connor C,
who I feel nothing for.
Yeah. He always is there. Like he seems just like a filler candidate, like seat filler. Like, oh,
exactly.
One of the guys went to the bathroom. Like we'll send this bachelor contestant looking guy out there.
So this also means then that the final rose, which Katie was holding in her hands when she calls Thomas's name, just disappears.
It's gone. Like she's holding it when he comes up to her. She gives the speech, close up shots. When he walks away and we see her hands again, there's no rose there. Where did it go?
And none of the men seem confused as to why that final rose hasn't been given out. So I'm like, presumably they gave some explanation. I guess we assume that, like, ultimately that rose is earmarked for Blake. So we still end up with, like, the correct number of men when he's going to arrive the next morning. But it was just, yeah. It was odd. It was a lack of continuity there.
This is the risk of this move, is that I'm sure it seemed anticlimactic to have her just hand out a rose to like Josh after pretending to offer one to Thomas, right? Like you have to end with something climactic, and so they have to end with her sending Thomas out, and then it's like, where'd the rose go? It's a shell game. So Katie is feeling she's riding the high of her bad bitch moment here. She's like, Thomas betrayed my trust. You don't get to use me as your stepping stone to whatever your goal is, which is exactly what a lot of these guys will, in fact, be doing. And that's kind of okay, because otherwise they're just victims of a really exploitative system. Not here, not tonight, not ever. And she's like, now I feel empowered to trust my gut. Now I know all my decisions are good. Something about my gut, it just knew something wasn't right with Thomas, which, like, did it, though?
You said he was perfect.
Did it, like, repeatedly on this episode, she's like, I really liked him until I heard this. She used to, in fact, sit down with Thomas and basically say, like, I can't name what it is about us, but I just deep down, I just have a really good feeling about us. So it's actually kind of the opposite, it seems like, which is that she had a really good gut feeling about him. That she changed based on more rational things. But she's decided based on this to trust her gut. And who am I to question Katie, the Bachelorette?
And her gut.
And her gut.
You are no one, Claire. You are not two.
That is true. And her gut right now is telling her to explore something else. And so we see her. It's got to be like 3, 4 a.m.
3, 4 a.m. I absolutely loved this scene, and frankly it really endeared Blake to me. She's like knocking on Blake's door and seems confused as to why he might not be awake in the middle of the night after she's presumably left him waiting there for like a couple
days. He's been awake the whole time, just sitting dressed in a beautiful outfit back against the door waiting for her to knock. They don't let him out, I'm sure.
So he opens the door. I bet he thinks it's like a producer or something. And he's, you know, wearing boxers. He doesn't have a shirt on. And she's like, are you naked? And he's like, I wasn't expecting you. He's like rubbing his eyes. He has no idea what's going on. And I was like, this is very relatable. This is how I would feel if I was woken up in the middle of the night unannounced.
Can you imagine? I just probably would sleep through it. Like they'd be like, you better come back in the morning. Claire needs her solid 8 to 10 hours of beauty sleep in order to look okay. And so she waits outside for what seems like kind of a while. She gets sort of impatient. She's like, should I come back later? And he reemerges. He's like, I had to pop a breath mint and put on my hoodie, and which seems fair. Gather himself. And of course, the optimism of the breath mint, like they might be about to make out. And she asks him to stay. And she apologizes for making him wait because it was actually like 5 days. It seemed a little weird that she was apologizing for making him wait until I remembered that he has been there for longer than 10 hours.
Several days.
And then Blake realizes that he's locked himself out of his room. And
again, another relatable moment. Now I like Blake. Wasn't a fan before. This is how easily swayed I am. You show me a little bit of genuine awkwardness and dopiness. And I'm like, this guy's great. I'm on board.
The power of storytelling to shape our perceptions of people. It's terrifying. It's dark. We should all be aware of this power at all times. So that brings us to the end of this episode. And it's time for Love to See It, Hate to See It.
Let's start with Love to See It.
There were quite a few moments I actually loved, but I'm going to go with Justin's incredible facial expressions, which are extremely jiffable. I don't know if it's unconscious or if he just really knows the assignment. He's like, all the guys here are required to be ready and capable of providing great reaction gifs, and I got that covered. It's incredible. I love him.
And I'm going to go with, as I just called out, Blake's adorkably awkward middle-of-the-night invitation to join the cast. I also would be very confused and half asleep and lock myself out of my hotel room if I was awoken from my slumber by just, like, a very hot lady who wanted to date me. So, very relatable. Love to see it.
I also want to say I love to see Andrew S. holding out amongst all the guys as they grew determined to just stir up a ton of drama and ruin.
Don't join the mob.
He showed a little bit of will and integrity, and I really respected that. Love to see that.
Oh, totally agree.
And now it's time for Hate to See It. Oh, actually, even more Hate to See It this episode than Love to See It. More belabored conversations about the right reasons. I swear to God, if this were a drinking game,
ban it.
I would be dead from alcohol poisoning. This was an out of control right reasons episode. I never want to hear the phrase again.
I just really hope we can all move on now that Thomas has left, but I'm doubtful. I'm sorry. I hated to see Blake's facial hair. I was charmed by him ultimately, and I'm sure maybe I'll grow to love to see it. But for now, I hate to see the ghost of a chin strap there. Mm,
fair, honestly. I also hate to see Mike P's Twinkie-induced fat phobia. I know that
hate
it was.
Hate to see it. Hate to see it.
I know it was not malicious, but it's so insidious and so harmful. And so I really do hate to see it.
Also, and look, this one is one that is shifting more on the scale of hate to see it as time goes on. Andrew S.'s English accent. It's just the bit worked at first, and now it's just it's like beating a dead horse in accent form. It's got to go. Just be yourself, Andrew. We really like you.
Yeah. Put English Andrew S. to bed for the rest of the season. That's all I ask. And now it's time to rate this episode on a sex positivity scale out of 10. This was a tough episode in a certain sense. Not a lot of sex-relevant portions of this episode. Probably the most was the bit where Katie, Tayshia, and Caitlin listened to the men attempting dirty talk for the group date dares. I would argue this could cut both ways. I didn't love that it put this kind of gross pressure on these dudes to do something really kind of intimate and sexual in a very public setting, that both for the TV and also for all three women listening. I don't know if I found that super sex positive.
It also could potentially normalize dirty talk, which, hey, it's a beautiful thing and nothing to be ashamed of. I think, you know, maybe we should just rate this one like an even 5. Mm. Could really go either way. Not particularly sex negative or sex positive.
I think I agree. And that's it for Love to See It with Emma and Claire. Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray, and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Sarah Patterson.
Our theme music is by Tamar Haviv, and our art is by Celine Chang. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer.
If you like the show, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. And more importantly, tell your friends who used to listen to us as Here to Make Friends and help us like get the word out about our new and improved show. We're really excited for more people to find and return to the show.
And if you want to get in touch, you can always email us at clareandemmapod@gmail.com, especially if you have questions you'd like us to answer on the pod. record yourself on your phone's voice memo app, and send us the recording. And we just might feature you in an upcoming mailbag episode.
You can also find us on Twitter at @LoveToSeeItPod and Instagram at @ClaireAndEmmaPod.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at @EmmaLadyRose.
And I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
We'll be back next week for week 5 of Katie's Journey.
Stitcher.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.